listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Catch Them Doing Something Good edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. Every Monday from 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to noon, my guests and I will bring you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. My co-host today is Linda McKinney. Linda has worked in the mental health and recovery industry for over 20 years. She is currently the founder of ASNAP, which is Adolescent Special Needs and Placement, and known as Queen of Her Domain and Everything in It. Linda, welcome to the show.
As always, Alan, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, I got to tell you, Linda, I am excited to have our guest today. He is someone who I have met. I met him at the Dream Center. Probably 6 months ago or so, maybe longer. Time flies. He's an incredible pastor. He's out of Texas, and he gave just a commanding message for us at the Dream Center. And I was very pleased to meet him, and even happier when I found out that we could have him on the show. Let me tell you a little bit about him. This is Matthew Hagee, and Matthew is sixth generation to carry the mantle of gospel ministry in his family. He's the son of John Hagee, founder and senior pastor of Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas. Matthew began preaching at 17. He's a graduate of Oral Roberts University, and he currently serves as executive pastor of the 2,000-member Cornerstone Church. He is also host of the popular television program The Difference and oversees productions at GETV, which includes four networks seen weekly in more than 92 million homes. Matthew and his wife, Kendall, have three children. And if that hasn't kept him busy enough, Matthew is the author of an inspirational new book entitled Shaken, Not Shattered, Finding the Purpose, Passion, and Power to Stand Firm When Your World Falls Apart. Matthew, welcome to the show.
Alan, it's a pleasure to talk to you again, and thank you for having me today.
Well, I'm happy to have you on here, and I've got to say, your timing for this book, I think, is right on target.
Well, I'm thankful to God that He allowed it to be so, and I'm hopeful that the readers who have the time to enjoy the book are certainly encouraged by what they find in it.
Well, let's just start right in with, you know, why did you feel Shaken, Not Shattered is particularly relevant today? I mean, is it in light of the current events in the U.S. and the world, or is this something you started before these things started to happen?
It was something that I began probably almost 2 years prior to its release, and the motivation for the book was centered on a resounding theme that I kept hearing from young people on a regular basis, and that was the world has just never been this bad, and they had a lot of despair regarding just the circumstances that they saw unfolding before them on a daily basis. And I thought it was important to communicate to them that the world had been here before, even if we had not, that the world had been through economic upheaval, and it had had its political turmoil, and it had had a run of natural disasters and different things that caused people at different times in history to say, the world's never been this bad. And even if your life hadn't been through the circumstances that it had gone through, you needed to take some time and think about what you had seen God do in the lives of others in the past and recognize He's the same God and He'll do the same for you. It was in the process of writing this book that my life kind of began to experience some of the tenure of what I was discussing. My father went through a four-way bypass surgery, which was certainly a time of shaking in our family. And the day that he is released from the hospital, the same cardiologist and heart surgeon had a meeting with our family again to tell my wife and I that her mother was going to have an emergency heart valve replacement. So we were right back in the same ICU ward with another side of the family. And then 30 days on the other side of that, my mother was diagnosed with breast cancer and had to undergo some very radical and reconstructive surgery to see that dreaded disease kind of cut out of her body. And so all of those things kind of made Shaken But Not Shattered a very personal message to me, because my life started to go through things that it had never been through before, and I had to hold to the fact that God was the same and he would help me get through it. And so it seems that as you speak to the timeliness of the message, the thing that I can rejoice in is that no matter at what time you need the message, it'll be there for you.
Hi, this is Linda, and I wanted to ask you, I'm glad you elaborated on that, but when you say that the world has been like this before, do you have anything, are you speaking in general terms or in personal terms? Obviously, you've been through quite a bit personally, and I believe me, at this point in my life, I can relate going through some of the same things myself, but are you speaking like in general terms, such as like World War II or the Great Depression or things like that?
Exactly. And, you know, people always say that perception is 90% of reality. Well, the perception of the world's economic situation during the Great Depression was it's never been this bad. And yet there were people who survived that economic upheaval and came out on the other side whole. They kept their family together. They kept a business going. They learned things through that process that enabled them to make sure that the same mistakes weren't repeated. It's important when our lives go through things that allow us to perceive that it's never been this bad before. We sit down and we visit those times and we say, okay, what was it that people did in that day that we are responsible to do in this day? I think one of the things that a great percentage of people in the world that they are lacking is that sense of personal responsibility. They have their present reality, but they don't want to accept responsibility for what it is. They're not willing to say, okay, this is what's going on and here is what I'm going to do about it. Oftentimes we find an attitude of entitlement that creates individuals who say, you know, this is my reality, what are you going to do about it? And that's the wrong question to ask, no matter what lies in front of you, what you're going through at the time.
Well, and I think you're touching on two subjects that are sort of pet peeves for me, and one is the personal responsibility. And I think that one of the problems we're having is our government is saying you don't have to worry about that. You know, we'll take care of it. But the second thing is, and I'll ask you this question. Do you think that the commercialism now that's being put on all of us is having an effect from the standpoint of, you know, that everything is going so bad and so you need this and you need this and you need this. And really, when you think about it, and you mentioned some of the other things that have happened, those things are far worse than we're going through now. But yet, you have people really believing that it can't get any worse than this, and yet, I agree with you, it has been worse, and we've gotten through it just fine.
Absolutely. I think, as you described commercialization, the book Shaken Not Shattered actually begins with what I call the creation controversy. And that controversy is rooted in the fact that through commercialization, through media, through information or misinformation, a lot of people have lost touch with their original design. They have lost touch with their designer. They have forgotten that they were created in the image of God. And because you were created in His image, the things that He created you to do is what you're able to do. And when you read those words and you find out what He enabled you to do, you find out that all things are possible and that every need that you have, He will supply. Well, if you put your faith and your trust in those truths, then you can endure a number of storms and come out just fine. But if you grab a hold of the commercialization that you see in society that says things are so bad, you need this, next thing you know, you're going to your pharmacist to get something to make your toenails white. And who cares? They're in boots anyway.
Very true. I have a question for you also. It seems that fewer people so it seems to me, attend church services or are involved in organized religion of any sort. How do you get this book out to, and I don't want to say non-believers, but let's just call them those who are on the fence or need a little push in one direction? How are you getting this information out to them?
Well, one, it's in every major retail chain, and so we purposefully promoted the book into venues like Barnes & Noble and different things like that, and did as much as we could commercially to try and put this information in other people's hands. Two, we invited those who read it from the faith community to share it with people outside. To make it a tool, if you would, to evangelize and witness and give testimony to, hey, this is what I believe and this is how I think it can help and impact your life. The thing that I have noticed in the years that I've been involved in ministry is that when people are really up against a great struggle, they're not as concerned about the source of the answer as much as they are the answer. And if you can provide them an answer, they'll change a lot of their traditional thinking in order to come over and find out what's going on that can help them in that moment. Sometimes it creates an environment where they don't stick with the decision they've made. However, you want to be ready and available when that time comes that they have a need. I tell the leaders of our church often that when Pastor, my father, began this church, he had two families that he met with in a living room, and those eight people decided that they would go to the homes around that home, and they would knock on the door, and they would say, is there anything that I can pray for you today? And 9 out of 10 of them, kind of in a very cold shoulder fashion, said no, and before they could slam the door, my dad would stick his foot in the door jamb and say, then I am going to ask God to give you a need that will enable me to pray for you so that you can have something to see that he's real. And without fail, in about 2 or 3 weeks, those folks would come see my dad and say, I don't know what you're doing and who you're talking to, but just stop. We need to talk. and the next thing you know, the church began to grow because they began to recognize that there was something to what he was saying. In the same fashion, we've kind of said to people with shaken, not shattered, look, I know that you know people who don't go to church, but their life is being shaken to the core on an economic level, on a geopolitical level. They're having to come to face-to-face with some realities they never thought they'd have to see in their lifetime. Please give them this information and ask them to read it and then talk to you about it, because that's kind of how you provide the information that people need to see their lives change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have started reading the book, and I'm already enjoying it. And in fact, what I have done is that I've now asked my 15-year-old son to also start reading it. So when I'm done, he's going to read it. But one of the key things that I noticed, there was a sense of integrity, to me, integrity in the manner in which you're writing it, but also a sense of integrity to where you're challenging people in there in regards to integrity. You know, think about your own integrity. So just, I mean, how do you define integrity, and explain to everybody why it's so important? Because I certainly get it reading the book.
To me, integrity is a very overused term and oftentimes miscommunicated amongst people. We think that integrity is simply rooted in what we consider to be the good and right in a person. But the reality of integrity is that it's a mathematical term, and it speaks of completeness and more about transparency than it does anything else. And so to me, there's a very common catchphrase that you hear younger people using all the time called keeping it real.
Exactly.
Integrity is more about being the real you than it is being the professional you or the at-home you or the at-church you. Everybody's familiar with the church smile and the church greeting and the church handshake, but integrity is when somebody comes up and says, how are you doing? You look at them and you have enough sincerity to say, I'm not having a good day, and I'd really appreciate it if you'd pray for me. And those kinds of things are how you can develop trust and you know, relationship one with the other that I think are essentials for the day. Not until you really know the 360-degree view of a person, all of their strengths, all of their weaknesses, all of their capabilities, all of their inabilities, will you be able to truly have an integral relationship with them? This is one of the problems that I think has impacted marriages, is that for so long people keep their weaknesses shrouded because they've been told throughout their life, if you ever display a weakness, someone will take advantage of it. And then 5, 10, 15 years sometimes, tragically down the road, those weaknesses rise to the surface and the spouse says, I don't know you anymore and you've lost your integrity. Well, the sad truth is you just finally met the real person. My father told his 5 children repeatedly when we would go on a date here or there with another young person, they say, you know, anybody can be nice for 2 hours on Friday, but the real person's locked at home in a cage. And his message was, you have to take time to really get to know somebody, and not until you know everything about them, all of the good and all of the bad, and as the old movie title goes, the ugly too, do you have what is considered to be a really integral relationship. We get a lack of integrity in our political system because politicians tell the American public what they think they want to hear. We get a lack of integrity in our corporate world because the boardroom tells the shareholders what they think they want to hear. We get a lack of integrity in our advertising on television because everything that's advertised is promised to change your life forever, and the reality is the only thing it changes is the balance on your bank statement.
That's a great point.
Exactly. I had a question for you. Not necessarily a question, but a lot of what you've written is very reminiscent of like the AA 12 steps about the being honest, the almost like taking an inventory, a personal inventory, just being honest with yourself and the higher power. And I couldn't help but notice the similarities. Is there any truth in this?
No, to be honest, that's the first I've ever heard it compared to, but I think it's a decent comparison because what you get in a lot of those programs are fundamentals, life fundamentals, and I've always kind of adhered to the principle that he who is best at the basics is best. Life is a lot simpler than what people want to make it out to be. You just have to put your trust in your faith in the simple truth that God is on his throne and that the closer you get to him, the better off you're going to be. And people hear things like that and they throw their hands in the air and they say, oh, that's general and I've heard it a million times before. But the reality is when you wrap your mind and your heart around that truth and start to implement it, take enough personal responsibility to see that it comes to pass in your life. It really, you can sum it up in as many steps as you like, but it gets you where you need to be.
Well, and I like the part about the keeping it real, and it's one of the things that we talk to young people that we're working with, and we get kids and we're taking to a program, and they'll say, well, you know, I can't go because I'm in love with her or I'm in love with him, and they talk about their boyfriend or their girlfriend, and they might be 14 or 15 years old. And one of the questions that I ask them is, tell me something that you know about them that they wouldn't be proud of. And they stop for a minute and they think about it and they go, I don't know what you mean. And I said, I'm trying to determine if you're in love or if you're in lust. You know?
Yeah.
I said, if
and are you infatuated with the false image?
Exactly.
You know? Because oftentimes I have very similar conversations on a regular basis with the young people here at our church, and as I begin to describe for them what I see in the person that they're dating, they say, oh, you don't know him. And I say, well, if you get on my side of the desk and look back my direction, you might see what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's a matter of building up something that's not there in an effort to have what you want. And it's something that can quickly be dispelled through integrity.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I have a question for you, and this is a loaded one. I noticed that you have 3 children of your own, and I'm just wondering, how difficult is this to practice what you preach?
You know, I think everything in life boils down to exactly that. We've kind of been talking about integrity in our conversation here, and if I don't practice what I preach, what good am I? The Bible that I have submitted my life and adhered to in not only my purpose and calling, but as a believer, it says that the things I do so that I will not in my words become void, meaning that when you see me living, if I have to use words to preach the gospel, so be it. And frankly, I'm one of five children, and I had a father who very regularly established in the minds of his children and in the minds of the members of his church that out of all the things that he ever had to accomplish in life, if he failed as a father, he failed in life. And so growing up like that has caused me to determine that it's my responsibility to do the same. That the most important thing I can do is to be a husband in accordance with the Word of God and to be a father that raises my children in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. If that makes me unpopular with society, if that causes me grief in the culture, if that creates crisis on any other level, so be it, because in doing so, I'm fulfilling what God has put me on the earth to do.
Now, and which I think is an excellent point, and I think it's what I believe and what many men out there do. Can you address a little bit in regards to those of us that maybe have gone through a divorce or have been in a situation where we think that maybe we have failed to a certain degree because of what the kids are going through now, or maybe what we, you know, what we felt that we did? Can you share with us a little bit about forgiving ourselves?
Well, the Bible is a book of redemption, and God is a God who gives second chances. And as a matter of fact, as I speak about being one of five children, my father was married and had two children in his first marriage, and then I am the middle child of the three that he had in his second marriage, and is still married to my mother. I have seen God's healing hand move in restoring the relationships that, you know, the world and all of its forces tried their best to absolutely destroy. In essence, to the title of the book, the shaking of our family that didn't see it become shattered. And the first thing that I can tell you is that through patience and through prayer, those situations can be rectified, rebuilt, and restored. The other thing that I have observed is that in all of those situations, forgiveness is the primary healing agent. It is the forgiveness of one former spouse to another. It is the forgiveness of the children to the parents. It is the forgiveness of the parents with their past and the things that are unreconciled in their own lives. I've had a number of folks come into my office to discuss these very similar topics, and then they often say, I just don't know how I can forgive. And, you know, I recall on one occasion I had a young lady who had been abandoned by her husband, and she had three young children, and she said, I've given him 7 years of my life. I don't know how I can forgive him for what he's done to me. And I let her know. I said, if you don't forgive him, he'll control the next 30 years of your life. And without the power of that forgiveness, she wasn't going to be able to heal. And as I say that the Bible is a book of redemption and God is a God of redemption, all redemption begins with forgiveness. So if you want to redeem the relationships that you've lost, whether through divorce or separation of some kind, it begins when you forgive the offense that has been created in those situations and through the tragedy of the circumstance.
Right, and it sounds like what you're saying is even when it begins with yourself.
Absolutely. You have to forgive yourself. You have to forgive everyone that is in any way connected to it with whom there may be offense, whether perceived or real.
Well, and while we're talking about family, and as we've said, you're the son of a pastor yourself, I think that gives you a unique perspective on what it means to have a strong legacy. What principles about leaving a legacy did you want to underline in Shaken, Not Shattered?
To me, my children are the only thing that I'll really leave for the world to judge me by. If I amassed one of the greatest fortunes in the world. The day I die, it's for naught. But if I instill in my children the values that I've shared in this book, then what they can do through what I have given them can change and reshape the world. And so I think it is crucial that people recognize that what they're leaving behind in their life is a legacy. They are training up the next generation. And so they have to go back to that primary message of personal responsibility, to establish in the minds of their children that I am training you so that you can be successful. This is something that has to be done with purpose and forethought, because if you do not take action today, you'll lose tomorrow. And if you lose tomorrow, the future is gone. When the Cold War was at its height, there was a very common ideology in the Communist Party that if they could get one generation to walk away from democracy, then they would win. And that's just how little time it takes to lose something, is just one generation. And so it puts a responsibility on every generation to make sure that your ideals and your purpose and your passion is instilled in those who are to come.
That's well put.
I'd like to discuss with you children going to secular school, or because of their separation of church and state, and it's frowned down upon for kids to pray at school or to have religious beliefs at school or to even, I don't want to say acknowledge that they're Christian, but it's kind of like, you know, let's not talk about it. How do you address that with kids that you're counseling with or kids that you're speaking with?
Well, the first thing that I do is I establish for them that the separation of church and state is a misapplication of historical truth. And what the founding fathers originally intended was for the government not to come into the church house, not for the church to impact the government. The individuals who were shaping the foundation of the United States were making decisions that were going to become the policies of our future, and they wanted to take a break from that when they went to church. The church is to be separate from the state, but it's not to be separate of the state. You cannot have these two existing independently of each other. They have to coexist and support one another. And so I established for those children, you have the right to pray at school. You have the right to carry your Bible at school. You have the right to freely express your convictions in any form in which you so choose. And anyone who tells you otherwise is wrong. Therefore, do so as you wish. Secondly, it's important to recognize that we live in a day when the truth has become a lie and the lie has become a truth. A child who carries his Bible in his backpack is considered as someone who needs to be watched. A child who carries a condom in his back pocket is considered conscientious. We have taken a lie and we have made that true, and we have taken the truth and made it a lie. And so whenever it comes to secular education and a Christian student, the first thing that needs to be established is, what do you have the right to do? The second thing that needs to be established is, are you in the right environment for you? Are you where you need to be in order to thrive? If not, then we can change your environment, and we do that here at Cornerstone Church by providing a Christian school. And you say, well, that's a high tuition thing. We underwrite the cost of the education here because we want Christ-centered environment for education to have that opportunity. There's no point in making something that is so precious a country club commodity. You need to make it available to those who need it the most. And otherwise, you've wasted your time, in essence, because you've reached so few. Regarding a public school education, it's important for the student, the Christian student, to recognize that they are an environment that the Bible says where there is no fear of God, there is no knowledge. And therefore, where they go as a missionary, they go as an evangelist, they go as an ambassador of the kingdom of God. And that's not always an easy task. If that's something that is going to pull them into wrong things and a lifestyle that's of detriment to them, then we make it possible through Cornerstone Church and Cornerstone Christian School for them to come out of that and go to a Christian school where God is first and He is the center of knowledge and He is the center of education. And you know, we explain to the parents this way: whether they're sitting in English and learning how to write words, they know that Jesus Christ is the Word. Or if they're in science and they're understanding all of the things that He used in His creation, they're recognizing that nothing was created without Him, because He is the Creator. In every subject, there is the foundation that God is at the center of it all. In secular education, that's simply not available. And therefore, it's the responsibility of the student to make sure he has grounded himself in that truth and is willing to defend it, even if the environment is not willing to hear it.
Okay. That, I understand what you're saying. There's no argument here, but I'm just thinking of the kids that don't get the opportunity to go to the Christian schools, and they are looked down upon, or they are taught evolution versus creation, and how... Some of the schools, well, we live in California, very, very liberal state. A lot of the schools don't even do the flag salute anymore because it says one nation under God. And mm-hmm. I feel for these kids. Again, I put my kids through Christian school so that I wouldn't have to put up with that. But how the kids that can't go to a Christian school, let me see if I have this right. You're saying to them that they need to have enough conviction to just hang in there, know what their beliefs are, and not falter from those beliefs, even though they're being taught something contradictory.
Absolutely. You know, the Bible says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. You renew your mind by reading the Word. And once you've renewed your mind, you have transformed yourself, which enables you to transform the world. I went to public school. I went to public school because at that point in time we did not have a legitimate option for Christian education here in the city of San Antonio, and that's one of the reasons why we began Cornerstone Christian Schools. As a student in public school, I was what I call and describe as a daddy told me so child. And that was because the relationship and the bond between me and my father was of such that it didn't matter who you were. You could be the principal, you could be the teacher, you could be another student. You didn't have as much influence over my life as he did. He did not outsource his influence, he maintained it, he established it. And so if I went to school and I heard something that was contrary to what he told me at home, we were immediately going to war because my daddy told me different. And it sooner or later got to the point where the faculty, the staff, and everybody in between knew if you had a differing opinion, don't share it with me because you were going to get to hear the other side. And it's something that people say, well, you know, I don't want to rock the boat. You have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't rock the boat, who will? And if you allow the rest of the world to run over you like a snowplow, you know, when your beliefs are lying flat in the dust, you cannot complain about the situation you're in. You allowed it.
Exactly. If you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything.
Yep. If you don't use your freedom to defend your freedom, you'll lose your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's unfortunately a fact. Now, I want to go back to the book for just a little bit. And right now, I mean, Shaken Not Shattered is your first book. I mean, how long did
Correct.
You? Yeah, how long did you know that this was something that you wanted to communicate, and you wanted to communicate it through the printed page? And again, this is coming from someone I've heard you speak. I think you command a very good message with your voice. Was this a way that you could just reach more people?
It was, and for a number of years I had been approached time and time again to write a book, and often said that I would not write until I felt I had a message to write. And as I mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, when I started to hear enough young people saying, the world's just never been this bad before, I thought that's something that needs to be written down, because not only in this generation, but should God tarry and in future generations, there will be people who will come by and say, the world's never been this bad before. Well, it's my prayer that Shaken Not Shattered is a resource not only today, but also in the future, for people to pick up and say, you know what? It has been this bad before. We just need to be responsible enough to make sure that we come out of this thing on the right side. And when I saw that opportunity, I said, this is the book I want to write. And so Shaken Not Shattered has become my first book.
Well, for those people that have listened to the show, they know that one of the things that's important to me is impact. I'm always curious as to what the impact is, and I love success stories. Can you share with us some particular meaningful responses from readers and what their impact has been from this book?
I have had a response all over the spectrum on this book, some from what I would have considered the target market to be whenever I wrote it, and others from lives that I never expected it to touch. I had one mother who picked up this book simply based on the title, and she herself had lost a child to cancer, and she had recently been through a divorce that was the outcome of the stress that the loss of the child had created, and in many ways her world was seemingly falling apart. She read the book and she said, for the first time in 3 years, I have slept through the night and have a sense of hope that there is something good that is going to happen in my future because of who I am and where I have come from. And that was a very profound testimony to me to see how God had used this message to touch and impact her life just by reiterating that simple truth. You are a child of God, He loves you, and He's watching over you. And those are things that you say, well, she should have heard that over and over again. Whether or not she heard it throughout her process or she just believed it for that one time, that's the kind of impact that this book had in her life. I have had a number of young people who have picked up the book, and they have read it and shared with me, you're right, there are decisions that I need to make for my future, and until I am willing to make them a part of my life, I cannot expect anyone else to. And those are the messages of success that I like to receive, because it tells me that the truth that I wanted to communicate in this book is changing the lives of those who are reading it.
That gave me goosebumps. It really did.
Yeah, actually, I was going to point that out because I'm looking across from her, and I'm looking on Linda's arms, and all of a sudden she had goosebumps on her arms. So I think you really touched on the real crux of what it is that people can gain from this, you know, is because to me, as you were saying that, I think that this is a great starting point for her, for that person you're talking about. Taking that starting point and knowing that from that point she can move on pretty much in whatever direction she wants, and I think feel good about herself and what she's doing.
Well, I'm thrilled to know that the book impacted her life that way, and I'm prayerful that it does that over and over again for many others.
Well, Alan and I both work with so many kids that are entitled. It's a word that I use a lot because it's very descriptive, and it describes probably, I would say, 99.9% of the kids that we deal with, this entitlement. And I like the way that you have addressed that in taking responsibility and not necessarily being entitled. That's very powerful. I wanted to mention that to you.
Hey, I appreciate you bringing that up, because to me, entitlement is an epidemic. We vaccinate against so many things these days. We're starting to tell ourselves that the medical stuff we're using doesn't work anymore because we overuse it. Well, we've got to start vaccinating our kids against entitlement. My father was 8 years old, and his mother said, today I'm going to give you something that will change your life forever. In his 8-year-old mind, he thought it was a bike, a birthday cake, something special. She got him a job. And she let him know that day that anything he wanted in life, he could earn. He wasn't entitled to it. He had to earn it. And in the very short period of time, my father, who grew up with that you need to earn it mentality, has seen the world turn into you owe it to me. And one produces success. The other produces absolute failure on all levels. And it's something we've got to vaccinate against, and the vaccination's the truth.
Well, and I couldn't agree more, and it not only brings upon failure, but it brings upon dependency. And I think that is one of the biggest problems, because there's the concern that the dependency is being done on purpose. I mean, from a political standpoint, it's much easier to control masses if they are more dependent than it is if they are independent.
I was going to say, the evidence will show. You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Regarding that dependency and independency, if you are dependent upon God, you can be independent of everything else.
That's a great point. Now, I want to share something else, and I'm looking over the time. We've got about 5 minutes. And something else that I'm aware of that I think some of the listeners may not, and that is that there's quite a musical side to you, and not just you, but your whole family. Share with us a little bit about the musical side, about your family, and is that something that will continue with you and with your family?
Absolutely. My father, being a ministry family, music was kind of a part of the hand and glove fit, if you would. And when we were children, he taught us to sing and sing together. And so for several years, we would travel with my father, and under the title of the Hagee Family Singers, we would sing in the different meetings and rallies that he had across the country and in different places of the world. And music has always been a passion and something that I really love to do, and so I look forward to continuing to minister through music. Recently, it released a song that was written with my father and Randy Travis, a country music legend, was privileged to have him participate in helping us write a song entitled Freedom Isn't Free. And it just kind of communicates a message that goes against a lot of what we were talking about regarding entitlement, that you have no freedom that you're not willing to fight for. And if you don't stand up for today, how can you sleep tonight? Because it's something that you have to every day endeavor to keep. And that is a very precious and profound thing that I think this generation especially needs to wrap its mind around.
Well, again, before we run out of time, I just want to let everybody know the name of the book is Shaken, Not Shattered. And I know that you mentioned that it can be gotten at Barnes & Noble and outlets like that. Is there a website that you have that they can also get it from?
Yes, the website is jhm.org. That's John Hagee Ministries.org. And they can order the book through that particular web domain and location, as well as you mentioned, in all the major retail chains and any other place they find it. I hope that they pick it up and it's a blessing to their life.
Okay, and then also, if someone wanted to, would it be the same website if they wanted to get a message to you? If somebody's listening and they say, you know what, yes, I may want to get the book, but I have a question for Matthew myself, how would they reach you?
If they go to that same website, jhm.org, there's a feedback tab that they can click and fill out a question that will come directly to my email address, and I'll be glad to answer it to them personally.
All right. And again, if you're out there driving, and you can't write this down, although that was a pretty easy one, you can also go to the website for the show, which is www.answersforthefamily.com. And we would love to have your comments, your suggestions, in regards to Matthew, in regards to the book, or even how to get a hold of him. We will be able to put you through and connect you. Matthew, I got to tell you, I am so pleased that you were able to come on. But I have one more. Can we look forward to any more books in the future from you?
Absolutely. I've got a book that will release with Strang Publications in October of 2010, and the current working title is Road to Revolution. And it kind of picks up where Shaken Not Shattered left off and says, okay, here are the next steps you can take to change your life. A revolution, by definition, is a turnaround, and there are a lot of people who need to turn things around in their life, so I'm hopeful that book will help them do just that.
That is great. I appreciate it. Now, is there any last message or something you would like people to know about the book? If there's any last message you'd like to make, please share that with us.
You know, Shaken Not Shattered, while it has a title that would suggest despair, it's actually a message of hope and courage and the things that need to be done in life to see you get through difficult times. And it is something that I prayerfully ask God to enable the reader to utilize as a resource that will instill in them not only the hope but the courage that no matter what they face and no matter what they go through, They can endure the greatest times of shaking that the world has ever known, but they don't have to shatter. They can stand on the solid rock, and in doing so can be more than a conqueror and have all the success that God's Word promises them to have. It's my hope and prayer that that book does exactly that in the life of those who read it.
Wow, what a great way to close. And one more question. Can we have you back in October when the next book comes out?
I look forward to it. You write it down and we'll make it happen.
You got it.
Great.
Matthew, thank you so much. Again, it's Matthew Hagee. The book is Shaken, Not Shattered. And Matthew, I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you for your time.
Alan, Linda, the pleasure has been mine.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Wow, Linda, that was pretty amazing.
I could have spoken with him a lot longer.
Yeah, well, and I'm looking forward to the next one. Is anything you want to share? We've got just about another minute.
I just can't wait to get my hands on the book and read the whole thing instead of just skimming through it.
Here, I'll hand it to you.
Reach
over and grab it.
All right. Again, everybody, thank you for joining us. And remember, seek to catch someone doing something good every day.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk Radio.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.